still potential with these products. But the decision to use either single or stacked or no trait will still be a field-by-field decision and will be one tool to increase agricultural productivity, we hope. That's it, Mike. I don't know if it's time for questions or not.
Okay, you've got 3.5 minutes for questions.
Okay. Yes, Keith. Good to see you here.
Thank you, Gary. Could you talk a little bit about this technology and specialty crops?
All right, the question from our reporter, Keith Dorsner, is do we ever see the potential for using these, I guess, general transgenic technology as well as stack technology in specialty crops? And I think eventually, yes, we'll get there, but today with our regulations, and we've seen they add new regulations each year, the cost for specialty crops is really above what the model to bring those forward is. We do know in India and places they are going forward with eggplants and other crops, and I think that will kind of break some barriers. But there's going to have to be some kind of coalition like ours for to help lower the cost, because it's a $100 million journey whether you're doing it for eggplants or corn here in the U.S. And a lot of those safety concerns do need to be tested out. They're very, very long shots, but we have to test those out.
The comments I'm going to make today are based on some experiences that I've had over the past 5 years in administering a grants program for risk assessment that's funded by USAID, specifically for funding risk assessment research in developing countries, and also experience with the development of a data package for regulatory approval of a BT potato product in a developing country, that is South Africa. So I'll be drawing my comments from these experiences as well as from the input that I've had from other researchers in developing countries with respect to the challenges involved in non-target arthropod testing, particularly in the lab. I begin with this slide first of all to show that the deployment of genetically engineered crops in developing countries has been increasing over the years. I don't know if you can really see these countries other than their general outlines, but I just wanted to make the point that a number of these developing countries have approved already the deployment, commercialization of genetically engineered crops, and many of them crops that express BT protein. But the regulatory approach in these countries with respect to approvals has been generally to accept the lower tier data that have been generated by the companies that have developed these crops to begin with. For the most part, the crops that have been commercialized worldwide have been developed by major multinational companies with markets and with the testing targeted towards acceptability in major regulatory markets such as the U.S. And therefore, the lower tier data that are generated are to fulfill the requirements, for example, as was just outlined by for EPA. And then the regulatory agencies in these other countries typically would, on top of the lower tier data, require field surveys that are conducted in their countries. Unfortunately, these field studies are not necessarily triggered by lower tier results, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. And many of them are non-hypothesis based, and so they're just general surveys with replicated more or less field trials that attempt to catalog the species abundance or species diversity in various field plots. And then they're followed up by, in many cases, a requirement for post-commercial monitoring. Again, with the couple of problems that I mentioned above, not necessarily triggered in this case by any sort of risk assessment that might have been conducted prior to approval, but also in many cases, these field studies are really non-hypothesis based. However, as we move towards the future deployment of genetically engineered crops, I think it's safe to say that in developing countries, the crops that are going to be deployed there are going to be a mix of crops that are developed both by the public and private sector. And that poses a problem, particularly for the private sector, the public sector researchers who are developing these crops, because much of the experience is not in the public sector when it comes to the approval process for these crops and also for pesticides in general. The other thing is that the focus on repeated field surveys, as they are implemented in developing countries by developing country regulators, are really of limited value. First of all, we already have a lot of published literature that shows that usually there's no consistent impact of the GM crop. That is, if we're talking about field studies. However, as they're implemented by many of the regulatory agencies in developing countries, the requirements are either for studies that are too short. They are basically simply cursory studies that are meant really just to demonstrate that something has been required and something has been done, with very little guidance about the quality of the field studies or of the data that needs to be generated from them. And then, of course, the problem with requiring repeated studies in each country is that this induces a delay in deployment. In my view, unnecessary delays in deployment, because in all the cases that I've been aware of, the field studies have really been unable to show any impact of the GM crop on non-target arthropods. This, of course, means an unnecessary expense. And of course, this also falls prey to the problem that these studies are not easily transferable, as Jorg mentioned at the very beginning. What this does is then introduce inefficiencies in the management of research resources in countries where the resources are really limited, particularly for research or for crop development. And so, One of the drivers, I think, that needs to be considered for the development of lab tests and the further implementation of lower tier tests in the regulatory decision making, particularly in developing countries, is to develop ways in which decisions can be made that transcend geographies or transcend local ecologies, which would be much more useful and much more robust for decision making. This, of course, poses some problems because of the technical input that needs to be developed, and some of these, of course, are quite obvious. In many countries, the laboratory facilities and the trained personnel are not there to implement these tests, and of course, there needs to be some financial input in order to develop them. But then also there is the problem that experience is lacking. That is, In the past, if we're to base the experience of testing on the pesticide paradigm, well, the pesticides have been typically produced by developed country companies for developed country markets, and therefore the testing, even in the pesticide arena, has been done by companies, and many of the private testing laboratories are not in developed countries, and so there's a problem of access. And what this means then is the experience in conducting these tests is not very well developed. There are, of course, technical challenges, which we've already seen echoes of even for developed country considerations. And one of the first ones, of course, is one that we've already talked about previously today, and that is, what are the species of interest? And in many cases, that is not entirely clear, and the regulatory agencies don't really have, in developing countries, don't really have a good way of trying to identify which species are in fact of interest. And I give you a couple of examples, sort of to contrast the different levels at which different countries address this issue. And the examples I draw are from a couple of research projects that were funded under this program that I mentioned at the very beginning, which I've abbreviated BBI, which stands for Biotechnology Biodiversity Interface Grants Program. And we funded a couple of studies, one in East Africa on cotton, and another one in the Philippines on corn. And the interesting thing is that in East Africa, that is the countries of Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania, there's been a problem in actually identifying what species of interest might be important when we're talking about the impact of BT cotton on the non-targets there. And the first attempt at trying to identify groups of species of interest focused on ants and beetles, which, of course, when you look into it more closely, from the point of view of known toxicity of the Cry1AC protein as well as exposure considerations, are not necessarily proteins, are not necessarily groups of insects that you would necessarily want to test or to study the impact of BT on, simply because of the mode of action and the routes of exposure. By contrast, there has been a little bit more thought given and taken by the researchers and regulatory authorities in the Philippines, where there have been some studies, of course, and of course BT corn has already been commercialized in that country. But some of the follow-up studies that have been done have actually taken advantage of a relatively ordered problem formulation approach to identify, for example, a couple of insects, non-target insects that might be of interest, and these are the first two, Aureus tantalus and Microscopus discolor, which are predators, and which are actually, interestingly enough, were part of the field studies that were done prior to the commercialization or the decision to commercialize the BT corn in the Philippines, but I think the recognition is that more at least in the research community that in order to gain actually more certainty that lab tests actually had ought to be done to look at the inherent toxicity of the protein to these predators, and so there are assays that are being developed there not only for this particular question but for future BT products that might be deployed in that country. And then there is the third example of a non-target Lepidopteran, which I'll talk about in a little bit more detail later to illustrate the tiered approach that was used or is being used there to assess the risk to that particular non-target. There are other, of course, technical challenges which are going to be similar regardless of where you are. That is the development of rearing techniques, testing methods, and then of course test substance production, including the including the studies that are needed to actually establish equivalence between the, for example, microbial produced protein and the protein that's produced in the plant. Some of these are I think what needs to be done there is also a standardization to show that so that the methods for establishing equivalence are also accessible or accomplishable by developing country scientists. And of course formulations in some cases may be a problem there as well. One of the things of course that we're all interested in is decent quality standards so that the results that are obtained by these tests are interpretable and valid. And of course, GLP standards is one that comes up quite often. But I think that's also going to be a challenge to accomplish in developing country laboratories. And I think that this particular consideration needs to be kept in mind as we're developing common standards to assure that the science is good, but also accomplishable by developing country researchers and regulators. And then, of course, finally, technically, there needs to be a greater agreement among different countries for commonly accepted protocols. Finally, at the higher level, of course, there are policy challenges. And as I've already mentioned, the fact that the lack of experience with a tiered system in pesticide approvals is a problem. This causes a tendency for regulatory agencies to immediately jump to field-based studies. And the example that I give here is the potato that is being developed with a BT protein in it that I'm helping with where the lead is by Michigan State University. And our visits with the Environmental Protection Agency there, the Department of Environment in South Africa, really were quite frustrating because we tried to work with them to identify particular lower tier studies that would be of interest to them. This is a protein, by the way, that has not been through the regulatory system anywhere else in the world, and therefore it was important for us to establish with the South African authorities the types of lab tests that needed to be done in order to move this forward. And of course, we were unable to identify any particular species, at least that they were unable to tell us what species they wanted to see tested, and rather required immediate field studies to look at comparisons between the genetically engineered potato and the non-engineered one. So we've focused all our attention on lab studies over the past 3 years over a number of different replicated sites, which then makes the data that we've generated really pretty much only applicable to this particular event and this particular set of circumstances. And if we are to bring forward another event, even with the same protein, it's unclear whether the regulatory agency will recognize or accept the data we've already generated with this event for future events. The other thing, of course, is that I think generally there's a lack of recognition of the usefulness as well as the limitations of surrogate species, and this is even a problem when recognizing the transferability, for example, of food toxicology studies. That is, in food toxicology studies, we use mice with oral gavage to as a surrogate for humans, and sometimes even those types of studies it's difficult for regulatory agencies in developing countries to recognize that these are actually accepted extrapolations for human safety. And then finally, the protection goals in various countries are really not well defined. And Jörg alluded to some of these problems even in the European Union, but I think they're even less defined and less linked to regulatory decision making in developing countries.